word collaborator is circulated among people in much of the collaboration in the world, especially among those involved in banking dealings. But it's a word most people in Palestine prefer not to use, since it's associated with turning a Palestinian from the nationalist class to the Israeli occupation class.
In Palestinian culture, when you call someone a collaborator, it means that they no longer belong to this society, that their energy is directed against it. They are the seeing eyes of the occupiers. They gather information and relay them to the occupiers. What they do hurts society. The consequences of their actions impact everyone. A case in point is the many assassinations carried out by the agents of the occupation.
Since its creation, the Israeli occupation has adopted the policy of assassination to eliminate opponents. But its greater focus has always been the resistance and its leadership, such as Majid al-Harazin, leader of Saraya al-Quds, one of the most important men wanted by the Israeli occupation.
He spent his whole life running and running. We only saw him every 10 or 20 days. We used to comfort each other over the phone. He used to come over at night. He'd never used the same method of coming over twice. He used to come in a new disguise every time or under a false name. Once he'd wear abaya and another time a jalabiya and sometimes glasses so he wouldn't be recognized.
Despite the safety precautions that Palestinian factions take, they or some of them do not deny membership to anyone who wants to join their ranks for the purpose of resistance. In reality, that person could be an undercover Israeli intelligence agent.
The Palestinian movements and political factions have arisen from among this nation. They pick their members from the ranks of the people. It's quite likely for some to fall prey to collaboration offers and spying before or after becoming a member of a resistance movement or a political party.
The recruitment process in the Israeli intelligence services differs from person to person. Some, like the collaborators, are recruited by the network spider web.
I got to know an Arab in 2005. He used an alias, Lover of Palestine. We met on the internet and he told me he was a practicing Muslim and that he wished to become one of the Mujahideen who fight in the name of God and Palestine. He also told me he would want to die on Palestinian soil.
Collaborator S.A. or Saba Al-Ilm, using an alias to communicate with his online friend, Palestine Lover, believes that this friend is able to change his life by getting him out of the hardship he's enduring in Palestine.
There are those whose desires are greater than anything, and so it's their personal desire and decision to collaborate with the occupiers and face the consequences.
I had just finished high school and would like to continue my studies overseas. It was difficult for me to leave, and so I told him I wanted to go over to his country and study there. He welcomed the idea and offered to help me do it.
S.A. continued to communicate with Palestine Lover through network spider web until Saba Alil arranged to meet with his brother, wanted by Israel, to speak with Palestine Lover.
I told Lover of Palestine my brother had been killed in an Israeli air raid. Of course, he offered his condolences. I had already applied for a visa. He then told me the visa had been issued and that In 1 week, I could go there and start studying at the university. In order to get out, I had to go through the Rafah crossing. In 2005, Israel was still occupying Gaza, and so it was in control of the Rafah crossing. On the border, a man from the intelligence service stopped me for some questions. I entered a room and sat with the officer. When we started talking, he called me by my name. Honestly, I was really surprised. I wondered how he knew my name.
It's possible for any human being to fall into the espionage trap on the internet. When you are on the net, you cannot be certain who exactly is on the other end. Is it a man or a woman? Is it a Mossad agent or a nationalist figure? Is he human? Is he this? Is he that? You're dealing with an unknown world.
The Israeli officer succeeded in continuing his communication with Saba Alil under the fake name Palestine Lover while sipping coffee and holding a cigarette in absolute confidence. And Saba Alil still believed this officer is his savior from his difficult living circumstances, not knowing that this man is planning for him a dilemma that cannot be forgiven.
Suddenly, he hit me with a second surprise. He asked me if I remembered him telling me he was a lover of Palestine, if I know how he knew that my brother was on his way home, and because I told him he sent me a message via mobile phone. Then I asked him I had to go because there was an explosion. I told him yes. Then he told me he'd given the signal when my brother was on his way to my place, and that's how Apache helicopters shot him dead. I was shocked. Then he repeatedly told me if I wanted to work for them, because if I didn't, they would expose me. Of course, my answer was yes. I decided to work with them so I wouldn't be exposed, especially for the sake of my family and because I was responsible for my brother's death.
One of the methods that the Israeli intelligence officers rely upon to recruit collaborators is the interrogation rooms inside detention centers built especially to hold thousands of kidnapped Palestinians for years to expose them to their methods of intimidation and lure them into becoming their spies.
First, freedom. We will free you and send you home. Second, sexual seduction. Third, we will bring in your mother or sister and harass them. They keep trying to break you down because they know the value of honor to Palestinians and to their struggle.
For those who do not fall prey, Israeli officers turn to the system of Shabak or Al-Shabas, a technique far worse than what happens in interrogation rooms.
اعتقالي جرى يوم 30/12/1984.
I was arrested on 30th of December 1984 and was interrogated for 115 days in a row. They thought I was hiding something. Their torture methods were ugly. After 70 days, they put me in a small cell with another two young men, one 16 and the other a year older. The older one began to talk about his situation and what had happened to him during interrogations. I asked him to keep his mouth shut and not talk about that subject. The younger guy did not a so nice move. He put his body in a vulgar position. I think he did it to lure me. I asked him to turn to me and look at me in the face. Later, when I was transferred to a normal prison, I found out he was an undercover agent posing as a Palestinian inmate.
Those who do not respond to such methods inside the Israeli detention centers are moved to the rooms of shame, which accommodates collaborators who have been exposed among prisoners in the jail and escape to those rooms which are used to lure and pressure new detainees to confess.
When I got arrested, they took me to this room with another four people already in it. I won't mention their names in respect. One of them told me to write about how I'd been arrested. So I wrote for them. I was walking in some street, and that there were two other guys with me who liked to walk home. But I wanted to go by car. I had nothing with me but my jacket, which I was wearing. Then they asked me to write I was a resistance fighter. But I said I wasn't a fighter, I'm just a worker. They attacked me and said, "Right, you are a worker carrying explosives." I told them I was not carrying explosives or anything else. Prison guard was spying through the door. When he heard me screaming and shouting, he opened the door and called out, "The collaborator."
When one of the collaborators is exposed inside one of the detention facilities, the faction's security department there takes responsibility of investigating them after suspicions have hovered around the suspect. And after his confession, he'll write down with his own hands, and then his punishment is determined in accordance to the faction he belongs to and the crimes he's committed.
The security services of Palestinian factions collect information on and monitor all those in prison. When they get repeated information about a young person, the faction's leadership tries to analyze the information so they do not mistakenly accuse a young man of wrongdoing. After they decide to investigate a young man, they transfer him to a special room and start questioning.
What forms or is considered the most dangerous type of collaboration for the Israeli occupation is the one involving mobile phones. It is quite possible for the Israeli occupation to monitor any mobile phone with the technologies it possesses.
Certainly, many of the investigations confirm the method used in assassinating or targeting those wanted by the Zionist occupation has been the mobile phone, because they make it very easy. Often we found out through investigations that the targeted person was carrying his phone on his pants pockets, and so the rocket came directly toward where the mobile phone was, cutting off the target's leg, though it didn't kill him.
Mobile phones are also used by the Israeli intelligence to attract and recruit new collaborators through communicating with them and offering them to become collaborators inside Palestinian lands in which the Israeli intelligence officers cannot be to make direct contact.
A collaborator was arrested while communicating directly with an Israeli intelligence officer in southern Gaza, on the Rafah border to be exact.
I was a lieutenant with the General Palestine Intelligence. I became joined in 2007 through an Israeli intelligence officer named Sami. He called me at the beginning of July, 4 to 5 days after the coup, and asked for my help. He would help me, and I would help him. I didn't agree at the beginning, but only on July 1st I did. Then he asked me to buy SIM card Orange. I told him I already had one. Then he gave me a code to use when we communicated. Our code names were to be Yusuf for him and Flowers for me.
The Saraya Al-Quds Security Department has succeeded in collecting confessions through interrogations of the collaborator Saad Ayan about the crimes he committed against resistors and his transfer of information about locations that have been bombed by Israeli army warplanes.
The intelligence officer requested information about Osama al-Hubbi Abu Qusay. I provided him with information about a person named Awath al-Qiq. May he rest in peace. He was an important member of the Islamic Jihad. He was murdered by Osama al-Hubbi. The Badr Mosque that was bombed, I provided the information to the officer about a weapons cache in the mosque. In less than an hour, the mosque was bombed. Then I told him the attack was successful and that the mosque had been destroyed and some people killed.
After the interrogation of the collaborator that was caught by the security of the Islamic Jihad, and we completed recording his confessions and the criminal operations he committed, then we surrendered him to the specialized authorities.
When the Islamic Jihad movement arrests a collaborator, they start the interrogation. They alert our brothers and fighters about the enemy's methods. When we finish doing everything else, such as recording and videotaping, we turn the collaborator over to the government so that they can deal with him in an official way and according to Palestinian law.
Later, we send them to face the judge, then they are sentenced. Some get long sentences and others the death penalty.
The war during 2008 and 2009 against Gaza has proved the failures of the Israeli occupation in achieving their goals of destroying the resistance and some of the notable leadership figures, in that there is clear evidence that the Israeli occupation was incapable of recruiting enough collaborators in Gaza or even keeping already recruited ones.
I mean, even if we could talk about the events in the Al-Furqan War, such as the assassination of Saeed Siam or Dr. Nazar Rayan, such operations were not intelligence-based and didn't need intelligence skills. But with regards to the other leaders of the factions, it wasn't possible to locate them or find out about their whereabouts because there weren't any spies around them, especially because they are resistance factions and have eliminated known collaborators at the beginning of the war.
And in a never-done-before step, the Interior Ministry in Gaza started in the middle of 2010 opening the forgiveness doors to anyone who has a relation with Israeli occupation intelligence.
I confessed on my own violation and told them I was a human being, that I wanted to return to God, that I had nothing left to live for. My actions have destroyed my reputation and that of my children and family. I have done more damage than necessary and collaborated in issues that lead to death. Why? Why would you give someone's phone or car number to someone else? Or why would you stalk him? It simply means you are a killer.
There are dangerous collaborators who lived and worked with the occupation for many years and felt safe. But they've returned to nationalism with this campaign. There are matters I can't comment on now but couldn't before. There are stooges from the lands of 1948 who returned to Gaza, surrendered and asked to become nationalists. With all clarity, we have declared that any informant that confesses and returns to nationalism will be forgiven. They will be able to continue with their social lives. And sometimes we use those individuals to send messages to the Zionist occupation, declaring that they have not returned to nationalism. There have been many successes in doing that. We did not find him through investigations, but I'm not going to say how he was let back in, whether he was forgiven or arrested, because that won't help anything but the occupation.
One of the most important discoveries during the campaign against collaborating with the occupation are assassination missions by collaborators against leaders of factions, notably the 2007 assassination of the leader of Saraa al-Quds, the armed wing of the Islamic Jihad in Palestine.
Someone was following him from the moment he left the house until he reached the square, and another would follow him from there. He was in a meeting in a house west in Al-Nasr, and when he left that house, the Jews bombed it.
The collaborator in the Palestinian society represents only himself, but he leaves behind families that have lost their loved ones and other families that still suffer great dilemmas inflicted upon them as a consequence of the collaboration of one of them with the Israeli occupation.